And so the first step in resiliency is understanding how desperately bad the situation is and knowing that you are the critical component. You are the solution. You are the ones who go toward the danger. You're the ones who hold together the tattered fabric of our civilization in dark and desperate hour. Things are bad, crazy bad.
Welcome to the Hey Chaplain podcast. My name is Jared Altick, and I'm a chaplain with the police department. I make this podcast so that cops can hear encouragement from other cops. I know that not every cop will go have coffee with the chaplain, but I'm hoping that you might at least listen to a police chaplain talk to other cops about being a wiser, healthier person. On this podcast, you'll hear from detectives and dispatchers, U.S. Marshals and county sheriffs, and the occasional traffic cop. From the LAPD to Scotland Yard, the guests on Hey Chaplain are giving you the wisdom gleaned from their experience so that you don't have to learn the hard way. Today I have a special treat for you. We're being joined by one of the world's most recognizable trainers on the subject of human aggression, resilience, and how to successfully function during and after a deadly force encounter. Today's guest is Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman. The Colonel's famous for his books on killing and on combat, among many others, and he is one of the most sought-after trainers in the nation for military, law enforcement, mental health professionals, and school safety organizations. Colonel Grossman sat down with me to talk about resiliency, memory gaps, and what's really important in life. Here's Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman. Hello, Colonel. How are you today?
Hello, Chaplain. Hey, doing great today. Honored to be on board with you and your magnificent listeners out there.
Wonderful. I'm glad to have you. I'm sure a lot of my listeners know who you are, but some don't. So where are you from? What gives you the expertise that you have? Kind of give me just a 30,000-foot view of your background.
Well, you know, I enlisted in 1974, 82nd Airborne Division, paratrooper, buck sergeant, went to OCS, infantry officer, Army Ranger, ended up being selected to be a West Point psych professor, wrote a book on killing that's really, really done some neat stuff, and then the follow-on book on combat, on hunting. I've got 14 published books, but kind of the key one for our purpose is on spiritual combat, Christian Book Award finalist. And Bulletproof Marriage, 90-Day Devotional, Sheepdog and Spouse, 10 Minutes a Day for 90 Days. And praise God, it was also a Christian Book Award finalist the year it came out. It's kind of cool. Retired from the Army 26 years ago. I'm 67 years old, married from my bride of 48 years. I'm on the road over 200 days a year. I think I'm probably the only law enforcement trainer ever to be post-certified in all 50 states, every federal agency.
Oh, wow.
All of our military and Tier 1 spec ops, and books translated in 8 languages. A lot of academic credentials, but I think my greatest credential is just that I'm out there with the cops every day, and they come to the training, and they need it, they desire it. I've got a deal where you listen, you know, come to my training 10 times, you get a free shirt. I've given away 6 shirts so far, and I owe a couple of shirts to a couple of people out there. So that's me. It's been a good ride. I love what I do, and I pray I can do it for another 20 years.
That's awesome. So when people ask you what you're an expert in, what do you say?
Well, you know, my real focal point is on resiliency.
Okay.
And the psychological impact of combat. Interpersonal human aggression. You know, my book on killing, 500,000 copies sold worldwide in English, translated 8 languages. But you know, you can go to Google Scholar, scholar.google.com, and every published work, it tells how many times it's been cited in scholarly works. And killing's been cited over 3,500 times in scholarly works. One of the great scholarly works of our time. The follow-on on combat, also cited over 600 times in scholarly works, and been able to have quite a bit of impact. And certainly the qualification comes from those who come and catch a class and find great value in it. It saved my life. We hear that a lot. And, you know, it transformed the way I see things, and praise God for the opportunity to do that.
So what part of your message do you think has the biggest impact when you're talking to law enforcement?
Yeah, you know, the heart of what I teach is resiliency, the bulletproof mind. And resiliency is people who do not get PTSD. Hmm. And the first step in resiliency is motivation, to know that you're sacrificed for a noble and worthy purpose, to understand how desperately bad the situation is. And you know, there's a faith component here. And I tell people, you know, this isn't about religion. It's just an existential question that people ask. And you see all these terrible things and say, how could a loving God permit these things to happen? And the answer is that we are not God's puppets. Hmm. A loving God would not make you his puppet. You know, would a loving father stay with their child every minute of every day for their entire lifetime, making every decision for them? No. You know, if you ever heard the saying, if you really love something, let it go. If it comes back, it's yours. That's how much God loves us. He lets us make our own decisions. And that means a lot of people make bad decisions.
Yes.
And you say, God, why don't you do something? And he said, I did. I sent you.
Yeah.
And so the first step in resiliency is understanding how desperately bad the situation is. And knowing that you are the critical component, you are the solution, you are the ones who go toward the danger, you're the ones who hold together the tattered fabric of our civilization in dark and desperate hour. Things are bad, crazy bad. Medical technology is holding down the murder rate. It's actually much worse than it looks, but not even allowing for medical technology. The Ferguson effect, 2015, 2016, explosion of violence we never saw before. The Minneapolis effect, the George Floyd effect in 2020, not even allowing for medical technology, orders of magnitude greater increase in violence, anything we've ever seen. When we allow for medical technology, the wheels will come off the bus, and you are the thin line of heroes who man the ramparts. Hmm. So the first step is motivation, to know you sacrificed for a noble and worthy purpose. The second step is motivation turned into action. And I told you, we study people who did not get PTSD. One of them, a man named Viktor Frankl, in a Nazi death camp. And he said, I realized the only thing universe, these bastards couldn't take away, is how I choose to respond. Mm. And you got to realize there's only one thing universe you can control. It's yourself, how you choose to respond. And if we give way to bitterness, if we give way to cynicism or complacency or denial, that's the one thing you can control.
Yeah.
And you've given the world a victory with your own hand, and we will not give them that victory. Hmm. And really kind of at the top of the list of things you can control is sleep management. We're in the middle of this global epidemic of sleep deprivation. It's killing us. It's a key factor in suicide. It's a key factor in traffic death. Sleep deprivation is a key factor in the opiate epidemic. You know, think like a scientist, think like a detective. You know, why opiates? Prescription opiates have always been there. Fentanyl's an opiate. We lose 3 to 4 times more people every year to fentanyl than we do to Vietnam. We had 3 or 4 Vietnams a year. And if it weren't for Narcan, ta-da, you know, again, technology is holding down the body count.
Yeah.
If it were a Narcan, that number would be 2, 3, 4 times higher than it is. So why opiates? Well, sleep deprivation creates chronic pain. You don't sleep, the tendons and muscles never fully relax. I heard all the time, give me a pill to fix. You don't need a pill, you need more sleep. And caffeine stops you from getting deep cycle sleep. This epidemic of caffeine abuse, these mega doses of caffeine. You know, just sleep in a totally dark room, cut off caffeine shortly after lunch, and you begin to rock your world. And these are things you can control starting tonight. Hmm. Just 2 little nuggets, quick and dirty, of information. Our bodies are designed to sleep in total darkness. Make it dark as you can. Combine it with a sleep mask. The most recommended sleep mask on Amazon has 85,000 reviews. 85,000 reviews for a freaking sleep mask. But that's how people feel about it. You know, I had a cop in Utah touch base with me with the text message. And he ordered overnight delivery of the sleep mask from Amazon. And he wore that sleep mask the first night. He's tracking his sleep with his fitness tracker, his Fitbit, right? He's tracking his sleep. He said, I had the best night's sleep with that mask on that I have had in living memory since I've worn this fitness tracker, years and years. I said, well, you know, the thing of it is, we need sleep in total darkness for the body to create melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone that lets us sleep. If we don't sleep in the dark, the body can't create melatonin. And so during that first night with the sleep mask on, you're going to have a nice night, but the melatonin you develop tonight theoretically will be there tomorrow night. So wear that mask tomorrow night and let me see how it turned out. Boom. He said that second night wearing that sleep mask was amazing. And he said, I never believed it could be that good. Yeah. Just orders of magnitude better than I've ever seen. So this is something you can control right now. Cut off caffeine shortly after lunch. It's stopping you from getting deep cycle sleep. Creates chronic pain. Oh, by the way, it's a key factor in Alzheimer's. Major factor in Alzheimer's, lack of sleep and lack of deep cycle sleep. So those two components, really identify the things you can control and do them.
Now, Colonel, you also have kind of made a reputation for being an expert on trauma and on the effects that it has on us. You've written about that pretty extensively. Yeah. And so talk to me about memory distortion and about giving statements as a police officer, giving statements after trauma.
I did an interview with a Canadian journalist just recently. Talk about the atrocities that were inflicted upon these Israeli citizens and the murder of helpless people. And the thing about it is that in combat, when there's somebody who's an actual threat to you, somebody who actually represents a physical threat to you, we get slow motion time and tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, memory gaps, and memory distortions. But when they aren't a threat to you, then the dynamics are completely different. A lot of hunters know, you know, my book on hunting, you can't understand killing, you can't understand combat without understanding the role of hunting, who we are and what we do. It's what we were wired to do. But a lot of hunters tell you they go to shoot a deer and they don't hear the shot and their ears don't ring. Well, that's auditory exclusion. And how could we have had 500 years of gunpowder combat and not let people know what every deer hunter knows? You don't hear the shot. These things that are happening in a life and death event, tunnel vision. Bad guys have tunnel vision too, and lateral movement can take you right off their radar screen. I love to shoot. I've got a black belt in jiu-jitsu, the martial art of the firearm. I love to teach shooting, and I believe every draw should have a sidestep built into it. You draw, sidestep, and shoot. And as you sidestep, you're a moving target at least, but there's a very good possibility to come right off their radar screen. So tunnel vision. People talk about looking through a toilet paper tube. Scanning breaks tunnel vision. So when we shoot targets down, we scan. Scanning breaks tunnel vision. Slow motion time. I've had hundreds of people tell me they can see the bullet. You know, if you've ever fired tracers or maybe airsoft or paintball, you kind of watch the bullet leave in the barrel. That's what's actually happening. In several cases, people are able to walk up and point where the bullet hit. But maybe the most powerful ones that blows people's mind are the memory gaps. Half of all trained seasoned cops have blackouts. Sometimes this memory comes back, sometimes it never does. I had the honor quite a while back, a decade ago, to train 200 law enforcement couples in Kansas City, 400 people. And one couple came up, a cop and his wife came up, and she told me about a guy had come to the house to murder the family while her husband was on duty. And that's the world we're in. That's the world our cops are dealing with. But mama there, protecting her cubs, most dangerous thing on the planet. The cop's wife killed this guy, game over. And she told me, I've never lost a second of sleep over killing that guy to protect my family. And I believe that. And that's a good thing. You know, if you could choose how you responded, I think you'd want to feel good about it, that you saved lives and that you saved, you know. But she said, you know what was really bugging me? She said, I heard my voice on the audio recording of the 911 call. And to this day, I have no memory of making that call.
Wow.
And she said, it was really kind of bugging me. And then somebody showed me your book on combat. There it is, page 55, on combat. Half of all trained seasoned cops have memory gaps. And boom, She was fine. As psychologists call that normalizing. That's too trivial a term for something so powerful. But you say, that's normal. You get, oh yeah, that's normal. You got to show it to them in the book. Show it to them in the book. Say, look, it's normal. Boom.
Yeah.
And they're okay.
So you have nowadays the body cam for police officers is becoming almost universal. And there is a difference of opinion about whether an officer should make a report before seeing that footage of himself or if he should be allowed to see the footage before he reports. What's your opinion on that?
One more powerful perceptual distortion in combat is actual memory distortions. Mm-hmm. Maybe one out of five cops just flat remembered something that did not happen. And I'll give you two examples to make this come alive. Young officer in Indiana, super square young man, about 2 years ago came up to me. And he said, you're right, things are out of control. I've had two deadly force incidents in just the last 2 years. He said, the last one, a guy drew a knife and his arms reach away. He started a knife fight, arms reach away. Odds are pretty good he's going to get cut. Mm-hmm. I think at some level, this guy said, I'm going to get cut. I'm going to keep fighting. He drew his weapon and fired, hit the spinal cord. Bad guy dropped like a bag of rocks. Now, you know, on TV, you shoot somebody once, they fall down. It almost never happens in real life.
Right.
But hit the spinal cord, boom. He dropped like a bag of rocks. Cop never got touched. But he said, I had this vivid memory of blood on my hands. He said, I kept looking for the blood on my hands. The peer support so important, right? Good friend of mine, peer support comes and picks me up. We're going to the hospital. He's fine, but I'll always go to the hospital. So go to the hospital. He said, on the way to the hospital, the peer support guy, my buddy said, dude, for the last time, there is no blood on your hand. Stop asking. Had a cop in Utah last month who told me he came back from an incident, a deadly force incident. Was getting ready to go into bed. He realized the whole side of his leg is bruised. We'd been hit by a car and he didn't even know it.
Hmm. So they should see the body cams first?
In the state of Texas, it's law. Everywhere else, it's common sense. The cop must have the right to see every video before they make their formal written statement. We got tunnel vision, things right in front of you that you didn't see. We've got memory gaps. We got memory distortions. The world is going to watch every video. They're going to watch it over and over again. They're going to put it in slow motion time.
Yeah.
And the world is going to sit back and judge that cop. Now, what's our goal? Justice for all. You got memory gaps. You got memory distortions. You put that down on paper. It's going to kick your tail in court.
Yeah.
It should be absolutely the law nationwide. Like I said, it's law in Texas. If our goal is justice, the truth is never your enemy.
Right.
The truth is never your enemy. And so, you know, we give that police officer every opportunity to see every available video before they make their formal statement. And their well-being, their emotional and psychological well-being, the successful, you know, to protect the innocent and to prosecute the guilty, all of that revolves around that initial statement. And as professionals, seeing that video should be absolutely essential. And, you know, we teach civilians, you know, after a deadly force incident, you say, you know, I was in fear for my life. Here's my weapon. There's the bad guy. I want to talk to my lawyer. In major departments now, they're telling you, just say, look, you know, I was, you know, here was the perpetrator. Here's the evidence. Here's the witnesses. I want to talk to my lawyer. Boom. Because from that point on, you've got memory gaps, memory distortions. You put this stuff on paper, it'll kick your tail. So the same thing that applies to citizens applies to cops. Now's not the time to be shooting your mouth off.
Yeah.
Now's the time to sit back and collect the facts and make a statement based on all available evidence when the time comes. Not right now, knowing that you are not in the best possible condition to be making that absolutely essential, critical life and death contribution to justice for all in that point in time.
But it's so difficult because when you've gone through something traumatic like that, you want to justify yourself. And so immediately you just begin talking and explaining and that kind of thing. And that's not very wise. Yeah.
And that all comes down to training.
Yeah.
And having the right answer in your mind ahead of time. You'll never do the right thing if you don't have the right answer in your mind ahead of time.
Yep. Excellent. Now, you just mentioned training. I'd really like to know, because you go to so many different trainings, a lot of times you're a keynote speaker and you are certainly around and probably get to hear other trainers that are covering all kinds of different topics. For a young police officer, what kinds of training should they seek out? When they have a choice, what should they be asking their department for? What should they be seeking on their own? What kind of trainings do you think are valuable for an officer nowadays?
Well, first and foremost, Chaplain, first and foremost is range time. If you are truly comfortable with your skills, you're less likely to have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about de-escalation. The first step in de-escalation is to be calm yourself.
Yeah.
If you're not calm, you cannot calm anybody else down. And the way to be calm yourself is to be confident in your skills. I think one of the best things you could possibly do is to be a hunter, to go hunting. You know, my grandson went out to deer camp. Now, my grandson's in the Army now. That he was 7 years old, he went to deer camp the first time. You know, he got out of school for a week. He comes home grubby and dirty. His mom said, "What'd you like the best?" He said, "Gutting the deer." For a seven-year-old boy, what's inside of that deer is fascinating.
Yeah.
This is the liver, and these are the kidneys, and this is the heart, and these are the lungs. You got the same stuff inside you, and you smell the same inside, and most living creatures are the same. And you should be exposed to that stuff. If the first time you see that as some terrible crime scene, some horrible accident scene, we set you up for failure. And hunters are confident in their skills. I've heard it over and over again. The people on our department who walk into a tough bar or a bad spot, the ones who are hunters have got a degree of confidence, a degree of competence. You know, we talk about buck fever and when hunting. What is buck fever? Well, it's the initial step down that path of preparation to use deadly force. Mm. I tell the story to every class of Officer Greg Stevens. May of 2015, draw the Prophet Muhammad Art Festival outside of Dallas, Texas. In the eyes of Islam, to draw the Prophet's a terrible crime. Mm-hmm. They're trying to draw bad guys, and it did. The FBI says this is the first ISIS-directed attack on American soil. These two idiots in Arizona said, "We want to die for the faith. What do we need to do? Go to the Draw the Prophet Muhammad Art Festival and kill them all." So there were two of them. They had body armor. They had rifles. They had 100 rounds of ammo. They screeched to a halt. They rolled out of their vehicle. They had the element of surprise. And a 59-year-old traffic cop with a pistol killed them both.
Yeah.
Officer Greg Stevens,
I've met him. Yeah.
A man of faith. All he ever wanted to do was be a traffic cop. 59 years old, 37 years of the department, never fired his weapon in a life and death event. 30 rounds of rifle fire fired at Greg Stevens. They don't hit once. From 40 feet away with a pistol, he's hitting virtually every shot fired, mostly hitting, kind of just dropping rounds a little below their body armor. Drop the bad guy down, game over. One of the greatest feats of marksmanship and courage in American history.
Yeah.
Now, Greg's department had an open range about once a month. Range is open, ammo's available. And he was there once a month for 37 years. Hmm. He said, Greg Stevens said, for 37 years, I made a monthly deposit in a savings account. Hmm. In May of 2015, I made a major withdrawal. How's your account looking?
Yeah.
You go to the range on your own time. They're not even paying you. You go to the range your own time. What are you going to the range your own time for? Because I'm a Texas cop and I live on dirt. And the range is open and the ammo's available. And there's something wrong with you if you're not there.
Yeah.
When I teach sheriffs and chiefs, I've spoken to the National Sheriffs Association several times, many state chiefs association. I tell them, you know, roll your next pay raise into a marksmanship bonus. Last I heard, LAPD still has a marksmanship bonus. And take your whole next pay raise and roll it into a marksmanship bonus and have the range open and have ammo available and nurture an environment of people who are competent and confident with their tools. Hmm. And that's the single greatest contribution we can make. Now, the next most important thing is resiliency. And that's my class and all the other things that come with it. To kind of paraphrase Viktor Frankl, life is a game. And if you lose your temper, you lose the game.
Yeah.
And the first step in winning the game, the first step in winning the game is to know that it is never, ever, ever appropriate to lose your temper. Now, we're all human. You know, we all fall short. Yeah. We'll try to do a better job the next time. But I think the goal of all training, the goal of all everything we do is self-discipline, self-mastery. And, you know, we talk about the laconic Spartan, the stoic Roman, the inscrutable samurai, the stiff upper lip Brit. And the day we talk about the quiet professional. And those are all different ways to say the same thing, self-control,
yeah,
self-discipline, self-mastery. So our goal should be self-discipline, self-mastery. And it begins by understanding that you don't lose your temper. Nobody respects our temper tantrum. Mm. Nobody ever respects our temper tantrum.
That's a good line.
They respect our calm. Nurture that environment of quiet professionals. And our training should be focused in those kind of directions. Faith will do that. Range time will do that. I really think that everybody should be involved in the martial arts. Mm-hmm. It's a great thing to do with your whole family. It's a set of skills. It's a set of discipline. It's one of the greatest gifts to give to your children. And again, that brings us back to confidence in when it comes to hands-on. We're confident with our weapon. We're confident with our hands-on. These are the things we can be doing on our own. You know, I sat on the dock with a pellet pistol with my grandkids and throw pine cones in the water and shoot it with a pellet pistol for hours. Now, how much did that cost? You know, but it's one of the most precious gifts I could ever give my grandchildren and myself as well. You know, Grandpa's got to hit that target.
Yeah.
Grandpa's got to be able to kind of lead the way and show the way it can be done, you know. And all of those things are tools that you can use to be prepared to be confident at the moment of truth, to have that self-mastery, if you will.
Okay. Let me ask one final question and kind of broaden our scope just a little bit. You said you've been retired from the Army for 26 years.
Yes.
And we have a lot of police officers who haven't been alive that long.
Yeah.
If you were able to speak into their life and set priorities for them, what kind of priorities should a young man have in your early to mid-20s?
You know, the first is to grow in your faith. The faith of our fathers will sustain us. It is the most important thing of all. Second is your spouse. Mm. Your job will end. Friends will go. Parents will die. But your spouse will be there with you throughout your entire life. And investing in your spouse is one of the best things you could do. We have a book called Bulletproof Marriage, 90-Day Devotional, Sheepdog and Spouse. It's got, you know, when we first wrote this book, my co-author Adam Davis and I wrote the book, 90-Day Devotional. 90 days, 10 minutes a day, Sheepdog and Spouse. Would anybody really do that? Well, it was a Christian Book Award finalist, and if you go to Amazon, it's got over 700 five-star reviews. And it's really valuable to see what other people wrote about the book. how they went through all 90 days, they turned around and did it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But make that investment in your spouse. Your friends will come and go. Your job will eventually cease. Your spouse will be there with you for a lifetime. And make that investment in that relationship right up front. Make time for family. And I tell you, that time with family begins by taking them to house of worship every Sunday and giving them that foundation of what they need. Kevin Gilmartin does a great presentation to law enforcement, and he talks about living long enough to draw your retirement and then living even longer than that to bankrupt your state because they have to keep paying your retirement for years. And he said, you deserve to live this full, rich life. And Gilmartin really ties together the research that says how valuable for your emotional wellness and for your physical wellness and your longevity is to set aside time, just an hour a week, to go to the house of worship with your loved ones, get your heart right, get your head right. It is one of the best investments you could make.
Yeah.
And that all comes together again with investing in those things that are going to be permanent. Eternity is going to be there forever, right? It's infinitely more important. Within the realms of life here, your spouse and your family are really the most important. And when you come full cycle, why do we stay on the job in these tragic times? Well, it's because I love my family. I love my nation. I love my God. The opposite of evil is love. Evil is the absence of love, just as darkness, the absence of light. And we fight evil with love. You know what makes a great cop is empathy. What if that was my family trapped in a burning building? What if that was my spouse being assaulted? What would that if that was my child that had been murdered? And that's empathy. And empathy is love with its shoes on in action. And that's what creates a great cop. And so should seek to walk that path with love and faith. To realize that love is what sustains us and love is why we stay in the fight. Love for our nation, love for our God, love for our family. These are the things that can sustain us and carry us all the way through. And Jesus told us, you know, greater love is known than this, that they lay down their life for their friends.
Yeah.
So what manner of love is this, that men and women will die for strangers? Yeah. What manner of love is this, that men and women will put their life on the line for people they never even met? But listen to that verse one more time. Greater love is known than this, that they lay down their life for their friends. But there are many ways to lay down your life.
Yeah.
And sometimes the greatest love is not to sacrifice your life, but to live a life of sacrifice.
Yes, that's excellent, Colonel. I so appreciate your time and your willingness to share this message with cops. I know you go all over the country and speak to them at different trainings, and I look forward to the next time that I'll be at the same event you're at.
Hey, Chaplain, put me in.
Thank you so much.
God bless. God bless America.
I want to thank Colonel Grossman for talking to me today. Now, when you get some people in a conversation with a chaplain, they feel awkwardly obligated to discuss spiritual matters, even when I don't ask them to. But Lieutenant Colonel Grossman is different. He just naturally gravitates toward that subject just about any time he speaks or writes, and he came back to the issue of faith as a part of resiliency during our conversation multiple times. Here's another excerpt.
And what do you do with all the things you can't control? And that's where faith comes in.
Yeah.
One of the pillars of resiliency around the world is faith. And my book on spiritual combat, people say, I read Grossman's on killing. I've read Grossman's on combat. Let's see what Grossman has to say about on spiritual combat. Because in the end, we're in a battle against forces of evil. Hmm. And you have to have a force for good on your side. Or your striving is in vain. And if you have even a remote idea that there might be something after we die. If you have the least possibility, there might be something after we die, then it's infinitely more important than anything else. Eternity in heaven is literally infinitely more important anything here on earth.
Yeah.
And you know, we should come to God with everything and take all those things you can't control and let go of them and hand them over to God. And you realize, well, this is not our home. This is not our home. Yeah. We are warriors deployed to a war zone. And we are deployed to a war zone to do battle. But in this battle, we win by saving lives. Mm. We win by bringing them to knowledge of salvation. That's the most important thing in the universe by far. Infinitely more important than anything else.
So how am I able to produce this show without suddenly stopping my guest sentences with non sequitur commercials for sleep masks? Actually, this show might have been a good fit for a sleep mask commercial. But this podcast is commercial-free because listeners buy me a $5 virtual coffee at buymeacoffee.com/heychaplain. You don't even have to do that. You already get the show for free. But thank you. It means the world to me. On the next episode of Hey Chaplain.
I knew who it was. They described him. He is, you know, 6'4", Native American with a long ponytail. So I knew, and I waited for him, and he came driving up with a bunch of his buddies, and I just pulled my squad car up. I hit my spotlight. I got out of my car, and I said, James, walk toward the light. And he started walking towards me, and he turned around, and he bolted. And 6'4", so I'm running through this crowd of his buddies, you know, and yelling at him. And I could see him reaching his waistband in the back of his pants, and I could see him throw something. And he fell a couple times, and he got up, and he was running. So I caught up to him, and I was probably about 6 feet behind him and off to his right. And I could see him reaching at his chest, and he pulled back, and I could see the butt of a pistol.
The views expressed here are the personal views of the host and our guest and do not necessarily represent the views of any law enforcement agency or its components. If you like this episode, please share it with a cop or someone who loves a cop. And thank you for listening to Hey Chaplain. And as always, pray for peace in our city.
So I'm really happy with that. Do you have anything you want to add?
Well, let's wrap this up in prayer. Okay. Dear Lord, take our endeavors, take this time that we spent together, take this product, touch lives, save lives, and let us be a mighty blessing in love and in thanks. And in your holy name, we pray. Amen.